Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 19 hours 30 to 20 hours 30 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 49 meter band, 6,205 kHz for Europe. 41 meter band, 7,205 kHz for Europe. 41 meter band, 7,260 kHz for Europe. 31 meter band, 9,800 kHz for South Africa, and 31 meter band, 9,925 kHz for South Africa. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via the following satellites. Galaxy 25, 11.836 GHz frequency. Telstar 12, 11.806 GHz frequency. Badr 4, 11,662 MHz frequency. And Hotbird 8, 12,437 MHz frequency.
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful, hello and welcome to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, coming to you live from Tehran, the Iranian capital. I'm Mehran Darakhshande with the program lineup on this Tuesday evening, 21st of October 2008. As usual, we'll start this evening's program with our news, followed by two political commentaries, followed by our news and views segment, where our colleague Mehdi Amifat has interviewed David Corton. David Corton is the co-founder of Yes Magazine and author of When Corporations Rule the World. The interview is about relations between Wall Street and Main Street and the US financial crisis. For our news and views segments, we have three programs lined up for you this evening. First one is Human Rights from the Point of View of Islam, followed by State Intervention, A Confession of Failure. And our final program this evening is Narcotics Propagation by Western Cinema. Stay tuned now for this evening's news headlines. In the name of God, I'm Mehran Darakhshande with this evening's top news stories. Iran's foreign minister says Iran is ready for implementation of strategic economic and development plans throughout the African continent. The Iranian oil minister says Iran, Qatar and Russia will seriously pursue the formation of a gas exporting group similar to OPEC. The deputy head of Iran's armed forces says the aim of grand aerial maneuvers has demonstrated the readiness of the Iranian Air Force, Iranian armed forces and the Iranian nation. And Iraqi ministers have not endorsed the latest draft of a controversial security agreement between the United States and Iraq. Iran's Foreign Minister Manoucher Mottaki has said Iran is ready to implement strategic economic and development plans throughout the African continent. Manoucher Mottaki was speaking on Monday evening. According to an inner report in a meeting with the Foreign Minister of Sudan, Deng Alor Kuol, in Tehran, Manoucher Mottaki said parts of the problems with which the African nations are faced with are due to meddling by outside powers. Wataki expressed hope that the crisis created by the West in Sudan's Darfur region would be resolved similar to the resolution of issues in southern parts of Sudan over the past few years. Commenting on Tehran-Khartoum ties, Foreign Minister Wataki spoke of broad potentials for cooperation in the energy and agricultural sectors. Whilst the existence of huge natural resources in Sudan, he said, provides an appropriate opportunity for Iranian investors and Iranian companies to get involved. The Sudanese Foreign Minister, Deng Alor-Kuol, for his part, hailed the Islamic Republic of Iran as a great friend of Sudan, saying Tehran has spared no effort to assist Khartoum. He added that one of the objectives of his visit to Iran is to inform Iranian officials of the latest developments in his country. Moving on. The Iranian oil minister, Ghulam Hossein Nozari, has said Iran, Qatar and Russia will seriously pursue the formation of a gas exporting group similar to the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, OPEC. Iran's oil minister, Ghulam Hossein Nozari, made the remark in a news conference after a meeting with his Qatari counterpart, Abdullah bin Hamad al-Attiyah, and the head of Russia's energy giant Gazprom, Alexei Miller. Ghulam Hossein Nozari and al-Attiyah confirmed that the three parties agreed to prepare the organization's constitution to be discussed at the next meeting of the Gas Exporting Countries Forum, due to be held in Moscow on 17th of November. Iran's oil minister Ghulam Hossein Nozari described the talks as a turning point in expanding cooperation between the three countries. Iran, Qatar and Russia among them hold more than 50% of the world's proven natural gas reserves. The Gas Exporting Countries Forum, which was established in Tehran in 2001, has neither an official charter nor a fixed membership structure. However, countries which take part in its meetings usually include Algeria, Bolivia, Brunei, Egypt, Equatorial Guinea, Indonesia, Iran, Malaysia, Nigeria, Qatar, Russia, Trinidad and Tobago, United Arab Emirates, and Venezuela. Also, Norway has observer status within the organization. Moving on, a senior Iranian army commander, Major General Ayatollah Salehi, warned last night that any adventurism against the Islamic Republic of Iran will be regrettable blunder and unforgivable until the fall of the enemy. According to reports, Major General Ayatollah Salehi said, a mistake could be rectified, but aggression is an irreversible blunder to which we will swiftly and decisively reply until the collapse of the aggressor. In further comments, the top Iranian military commander added, that playing the role of bully on the presumption of sophisticated equipment and weapons and the like does not signify superiority. As a matter of fact, he said, the greatest weakness of an enemy is its large size and powerful appearance. Moving on, the deputy head of Iran's armed forces has said the aim of the Grand Aerial Maneuvers, codenamed Devotees of the Realm of Velayat, demonstrated the readiness of the Iranian armed forces, of the Iranian Air Force and the Iranian nation. According to an INA report, Major General Said Abdulrahim Mousavi added that anyone who thinks of violating Iran's borders will gravely regret that decision. He was satisfied at the success of the recent aerial exercises, saying young Iranian pilots displayed their talents and prowess. The three-stage aerial maneuvers wrapped up on Monday. Moving on, the director of the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, Mohammad Al-Baradei, has disputed claims by certain Western countries against Iran, saying the Islamic Republic of Iran is not developing nuclear weapons, as alleged by certain Western countries, and it does not have the needed materials. Speaking on Monday in an address at London City Hall, Mohammad Al-Baradei said Iran does not even have low-enriched uranium to develop even one nuclear weapon. Al-Baradei's report last September also confirmed that the International Atomic Energy Agency has conducted 17 unannounced inspections at Iran's various nuclear sites, where uranium-235 has been enriched under the agency's strict supervision only to a level of less than 5%. That rate of enrichment is consistent with the construction of a nuclear power plant for electricity generation and not for nuclear weapons development, which requires enrichment levels of above 90%. Moving on, According to news agencies, the latest U.S. moves to intensify political pressure and to impose more sanctions on Iran have failed once again. Associated Press has reported that talks amongst the 5+1 group remained inconclusive because of China's opposition. This is whilst the Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov had previously announced Russia's opposition to tougher sanctions against Tehran, calling them non-constructive. Lavrov's deputy Sergei Ryabkov, after a visit to Tehran recently, said Moscow is opposed to tougher sanctions against Tehran, adding that Moscow believes the grounds is not ready for such sanctions. We have prepared a news report for you after this news bulletin. Moving on. The first deputy chairman of the International Relations Committee of the Russian Parliament, the Duma, has said Iran and Russia have common enemies. Yuri Kavtsinsky, the first deputy chairman of the International Relations Committee in Duma, in an exclusive interview with RIB, said these enemies are trying to pressure Iran and Russia in a bid to impose their will. He denounced any kind of sanctions and threats against Iran, saying the only option to resolve the crisis created by the West over Iran's peaceful nuclear program is through dialogue. The senior Russian MP warned that certain elements have embarked on deceptive and baseless attempts that endanger global security and stability. Yuri Kavtsinsky rejected as impractical the so-called dual policy of the West vis-à-vis Iran's nuclear program. He noted that Iran has sincerely announced on several occasions that it is not in pursuit of nuclear weapons, which means that nobody has the right to put any kinds of pressure on Iran on these baseless allegations. Moving on to Iraq. Iraqi ministers have not endorsed the latest draft of a controversial security agreement between the United States and Baghdad. Iraq's Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki and his ministers examined the details of the so-called security pact during a five-hour cabinet session today, Tuesday, and called for amendments to the text. Iraqi government spokesman Ali al-Dabbagh said the cabinet decided to introduce amendments to the draft that are necessary to win the nation's approval. Iraq's Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki had earlier declared that any agreement with the Americans should consider Iraq's sovereignty and Iraq's national interests. Government spokesman Ali al-Dabbagh said the cabinet will meet again in a few days to consider the amendments and forward them to the Americans. He didn't elaborate further. The United States has been pressuring the government in Baghdad into signing the so-called Status of Forces Agreement, or SOFA, before the term of U.S. President George W. Bush ends in office this January. And staying with Iraq. Interior Ministry officials from all countries bordering Iraq are currently meeting in Amman, Jordan. According to an INA report, Interior Ministry officials at the two-day meeting in Amman, which started yesterday, are discussing security-related issues. After this preliminary meeting, the main meeting will take place on Thursday. This meeting will be attended by the interior ministers of Jordan, Iran, Bahrain, Turkey, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, Syria, and Iraq. Participants at the meeting will report on their efforts to secure the border with Iraq and measures to prevent terrorists crossover into Iraqi territory. The Iranian delegation at the main meeting is scheduled to present a report on opening up of at least two new crossing points to facilitate the transfer of tourists and pilgrims between the Islamic Republic of Iran and Iraq. The Iranian delegation will also present a report on measures to further develop border areas between Iran and Iraq, as well as joint security patrols along the border. And continuing with Iraq, one of Iraq's top religious authorities, Grand Ayatollah Sayyid Kazem Husseini al-Hayri, has issued a religious edict forbidding the signing of the so-called security pact with Washington. According to a report by the Al Alam television network, in a statement released from his office, Grand Ayatollah Hayri addressed the Iraqi people saying, "We are well aware of the ongoing pressures of the occupation forces on the elected government of Iraq to compel it to sign a despicable pact, the so-called Status of Forces Agreement." The statement said, "We consider it against the country's national interests and sovereignty." Grand Ayatollah Hari's edict made it clear that signing of such a disgraceful accord is a stain on Islamic dignity and Iraq's national sovereignty. And Ayatollah Khairi reiterated that those who assist in any way the occupiers for finalizing the controversial deal are committing an unforgivable sin. And continuing with the news, a top US general has admitted that efforts by NATO occupation forces in Afghanistan are disjointed and that the political will to fight on in Afghanistan is wavering. According to a Press TV report, John Craddock, NATO's Supreme Allied Commander in Europe, in a speech to policymakers and defence analysts in London, said, "We're demonstrating a political will that is, in my judgment, sometimes wavering." John Craddock told an audience at London's Royal United Services Institute. Craddock said, "It is this wavering political will that impedes operational progress and brings into question the relevance of the NATO alliance in the 21st century." The NATO alliance, he said, needed to look intently at what they really wanted to achieve. John Craddock also said the campaign in Afghanistan was suffering from manpower shortcomings as well as shortcomings of the Afghan government. Moving on, the Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has arrived in India to pave the way for signing of a non-military nuclear cooperation agreement between Moscow and New Delhi. Sergei Lavrov, the Russian Foreign Minister, is slated to meet with his Indian counterpart, Foreign Minister Pranab Mukherjee, as well as India's Prime Minister Manmohan Singh. According to a Fast News Agency report, an Indian Foreign Ministry official has confirmed that Russian President Dmitry Medvedev will visit New Delhi on Friday, 5th of December 2008, to sign a civilian nuclear cooperation accord between the two countries. It should also be noted that India has recently signed a nuclear cooperation agreement with the United States, which removes decades-old barriers to transfer of sensitive nuclear technology from Washington to New Delhi. The agreement opens up strategic cooperation between Washington and New Delhi. Moving on to U.S. Presidential campaigning. U.S. Democratic candidate Barack Obama is bringing several GOP-leaning states he's aiming to win together in one place. With the current economic crisis creating favorable conditions for the Democrats, Obama has focused his final stretch message almost entirely on that topic and almost entirely on traditional Republican turf. The subject of America's battered economy and battered households is particularly timely in Florida, which has unemployment above the national average and one of the worst foreclosure rates in the U.S. So on a two-day swing aimed at turning Florida his way, Barack Obama planned to hammer home the message that he has the best economic plan during Tuesday's roundtable discussion. The event, amounting to a mass public endorsement of his economic proposals, was drawing the governors of Michigan, Ohio, New Mexico, and Colorado to the town of Lake Worth on Florida's east coast. And more news. According to the latest Reuters C-SPAN Zoghbi opinion poll released on Tuesday, Barack Obama has now opened up an 8-point lead over his Republican rival John McCain, with only 2 weeks to go to the U.S. presidential elections. Obama leads McCain 50% to 42% amongst likely U.S. voters in the latest 3-day tracking poll, up from a 6% advantage for Obama last Monday. The telephone poll has a margin of error of 2.9 percentage points. It was a second consecutive day that Barack Obama gained ground on McCain as the two head into the final sprint to the November 4th presidential elections. That's it from our news. Our political commentaries are next. Iran's nuclear developments. According to news agencies, U.S. moves to intensify political pressure and to impose tougher sanctions on Iran have failed once again. Associated Press reported on Monday that talks amongst the 5+1 group have remained inconclusive because of China's opposition. This is whilst Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov had earlier announced Russia's opposition to any tougher sanctions against Iran, calling them non-constructive. Sergei Lavrov's deputy, Sergei Ryabkov, after a visit to Tehran, said Moscow is opposed to any tougher sanctions against Tehran. The UN Security Council has up to now approved 4 illegal resolutions on economic sanctions against Iran. A spokesman for the US State Department, Robert Wood, after the failure of Washington's efforts to intensify pressure on Iran, said diplomats involved on Monday's phone conference said they will follow up what they called a dual strategy by continuing contacts. This is whilst Iran reiterated its legitimate nuclear rights as a member of the International Atomic Energy Agency and a signatory to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, the NPT, and considers all calls for stopping uranium enrichment as illegal. The International Atomic Energy Agency, in at least 12 reports, has also confirmed the peacefulness of Iran's civilian nuclear activities. The Non-Aligned Movement last September, in a statement, supported Iran's peaceful nuclear activities, reiterating that all countries have the right to use nuclear energy for peaceful purposes, and that this right should not be prevented or limited. Early voting in Florida. With the commencement of early voting in the state of Florida, the U.S. presidential elections have entered their crucial final phase. Florida earned notoriety in the 2000 presidential race with vote rigging in favor of George W. Bush by his brother, the then Governor Jeb Bush, which was instrumental in the Republican tying up with Democrat Al Gore, was almost certain to win. As a result, for the first time in U.S. history, the U.S. Supreme Court was entrusted with the task of determining the winner of the presidential elections. And it was only after Al Gore graciously withdrew his case that George W. Bush was awarded the presidency, which for the past 8 years has brought nothing but disaster for the American public and for many countries around the world, including Iraq and Afghanistan. Continuing with the current election race in 2008, polling in Florida started last Monday and will continue until 4th of November. Voters in Florida can cast their ballots via post or can queue up at the polling booth to exercise their right to vote. According to the latest results, Democrats are leading Republicans with 600,000 votes. In case this trend continues, as indicated by political observers, the Democratic candidate, Senator Barack Obama, stands a good chance of winning the race to the White House if the Republicans don't cheat as they did in the 2000 campaign. For this reason, the election in Florida are under intense scrutiny, and election observers are keen to see whether any hindrances would take place for African-American voters registering their votes. In view of these, officials have decided to come up with early voting in Florida, apparently to lessen the possibility of vote rigging in this important swing state. Considering Democrats' comparative victory in Florida, the election campaign are mainly focused on the swing states of Ohio, Michigan, Virginia, and Colorado. Meanwhile, Hispanic and Protestant leaders have announced their support for Democratic candidate Barack Obama, a shift from their traditional support for the Republican Party. This will undoubtedly inflict a heavy blow on the Republican candidate John McCain, who will be deprived of support of evangelical Christians. The 8-year blunders and the misguided policies of the Bush administration in relation to immigrant Hispanics and evangelicals have further weakened the Republican cause in the ongoing presidential race, giving the Democrats the upper hand. And now in our News and Views segment, we present you with a topical interview on current affairs. Well, our colleague Mehdi Garifad has interviewed David Corton, co-founder of Yes Magazine and author of When Corporations Rule the World. The interview is about the relationship between Wall Street and Main Street and the U.S. financial crisis.
Sir David Corton, it's a great honor to have you with me in this program.
I'm delighted to be with you.
Mr. Corton, first of all, let's talk about your article, Main Street Before Wall Street. You believe that we should find the relationship between Main Street and Wall Street. Could you please, first of all, elaborate on your article and brief our listeners about it?
Yes, those, of course, are terms that are quite common in the United States. Wall Street refers to the system of finance, but in particular, the system of financial speculation that claims to be creating wealth and funding real economic activity in the most efficient way. But in fact, as we've seen in the financial crash. It's really a system of speculation, financial bubbles, and the creation of fictitious wealth and predatory lending. Main Street's a term that we use to refer to the real economy of people and resources and businesses producing the goods and services that people need in their daily life. Now, you know, what's been happening in the financial markets is Wall Street increasingly cutting itself off and pursuing its own profits in ways that create incredible financial instability and actually endanger the real economy.
Mr. Quarton, some believe that the U.S. markets were intentionally manipulated by those people who are friends and close to the White House or to the big corporates. And this bailout plan is an intentional action by the U.S. government to help its friends. What is your idea on this?
I think there's surely a great deal of truth to it. I mean, the truth is that Wall Street interests have been putting enormous amounts of money into both the Republican and Democratic parties. They have created an ideology, particularly among the Republicans, of that markets will correct themselves and will operate in the most beneficial and efficient way if they are deregulated. Now, that thesis has proven totally untrue. It's hard to sort out how much is an intentional conspiracy and how much is just the normal working of close buddy relationships between the people involved. Certainly, U.S. Treasury Secretary Paulson comes from Wall Street, from Goldman Sachs, one of the biggest of the Wall Street investment houses, and is clearly tied to those interests. So it's hard to tell exactly where the bailout money will go, but the risk that it will be used to help insider friends rather than to actually solve the problem is a very real risk and possibility, particularly with this particular U.S. administration, which I would consider one of the most corrupt and incompetent in the history of our country.
IMF Managing Director said recently that the global financial system is on the brink of a systematic meltdown, despite interventions by the U.S. and Europe to stabilize markets. How is it, Mr. Quarton, that the U.S. economy affects other big economies around the world?
Well, partly what we're seeing here is the consequence of this drive to economic globalization, which really has been a process of extending the power of global or transnational corporations and the power of global financial markets to, in a sense, colonize the economies all around the world. And part of the consequence is to interconnect economies in ways that create enormous instability. So money is flowing in and out of countries without restraint based on the whims of financial speculators. And we've been seeing some studies recently that indicate that those economies that have been most successful in limiting inflows of foreign money are also now the most stable and best able to weather this financial crisis. But any economy in which speculative money can flow in and out without restraint is in danger, particularly as this whole debt-based money system goes into collapse.
What is the reason that the measures adopted so far, like coordinated central bank rate cuts or bailout plan and etc., have not yet achieved the goal of stabilizing markets and bolstering confidence? And what additional moves will likely be needed in the coming weeks or months?
The real underlying issue in terms of bringing back stability is restoring confidence in the markets and the institutions, because you know, there's been so much, so many off-the-book transactions, so much distortion of the ratings of bonds and so forth that that nobody knows who they can trust. And it's, you know, we've never had a situation quite like this before, so it is very difficult to know what will restore the restore that trust. Partly because the breakdown has revealed just how corrupted the whole system is. Now my hope is that we can use the crisis to move forward with much deeper reforms to get the speculation out of the system, to recognize that we really need to evaluate economic performance on a wholly different basis to break the hold of this obsession with economic growth and focus more on when is the economy performing to support the best human community and the health of people, communities, and our natural systems, which would be a very different kind of economic system. You know, longer term, we need to actually move away from a debt-based money system where our money is issued into existence by private banks and move to a system of public issuance. These, of course, though, are much deeper issues. You know, for the moment, I think there's going to have to be a massive correction because we have created an economic system that is so out of balance, that is so skewed in terms of the concentration of wealth, and is dependent on a money system so based on speculation that I think there's no question that there's going to be a very painful adjustment to bring things back into balance. And there's probably no way around that. There are things they may be able to do to kind of patch up the system temporarily, but that does not correct the underlying imbalances that have to be worked out.
David Quarton, co-founder and board chair of Yes Magazine and also author of When Corporations Rule the World. I really appreciate your time. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you. It's been a privilege to talk with you.
Rights from the viewpoint of Islam. In the name of God, the Merciful, the Compassionate, Salam everybody, and here's another weekly edition of Human Rights from the Viewpoint of Islam. Please stay with us. Islam says God has made the human being the best of creation, and unlike other creatures, has given it the free will to choose either the path of virtue with its rewards, including the lasting bliss of paradise, or to choose the path of vices that leads to torment and the fires of the eternal inferno. Thus, those who are sincere and honest, they surely move towards perfection and lead a life of dignity and self-satisfaction in this world, irrespective of their material means. On the other hand, those that have no control over their carnal desires and are insincere to their own inner self gradually drift away from truth and lead an uneasy, psychologically tormenting life, even if they have the world's riches. The basic factor in this regard is proper cognizance of God, the Almighty Creator, and obedience to His commandments in order to develop the resolve to calmly face the ups and downs of life with self-contentment. First and foremost, one should be aware of rights and responsibilities of himself and that of others. If we recognize rights and responsibilities and observe them, this will surely lead to sincere relations, harmony, and understanding in both our family life as well as in the society. Among the ways of properly understanding rights and responsibilities is awareness of our innate assets and the great blessings that God has bestowed upon us. Last week, we spoke of the importance of such a small organ of our body as the tongue, and how it determines our prosperity or doom.
Today, we will focus on another important bodily organ, that is the ear, and how to use it properly, as defined so beautifully by the Prophet's fourth infallible successor, Imam Zainul Abidin, peace be upon him, in his famous Risalat al-Hurur, or Treatise of Rights. In our daily life, we hear different sounds such as the voices of our fellow humans, car horns, the chirping of birds, and the noise that the invisible wind makes while blowing amidst trees and buildings. Some of these sounds are pleasant to our ears, while some of these are naturally annoying, including braying of an ass. But are we required to listen to all the sounds we hear? Here we should understand that listening is different from hearing, since hearing is involuntary and includes all sounds that reach us from around. But listening is a mental activity related to our brain and its ability to absorb, which is done with our free will. In other words, good listening is an art that needs to be properly developed in order to help us better understand the purpose of the person speaking to us, whether it is our parent or elder, whether it is our spouse and children, whether it is our teacher or instructor, whether it is our business partner, or whether it is our friend, colleague, acquaintance, and mere stranger. Listening has both physical and psychological implications. Actually, when a person listens properly, he establishes a good and effective relationship with others. This type of listening prevents many misunderstandings. Thus, the most important skill which helps to have a proper and logical understanding of the words and feelings of others is good listening. Those who have managed to master the art of proper listening and analyzing of words and phrases very quickly climb the ladder of success in life. But the most important point of listening is to properly understand what to listen to and what to abstain from in order to build up ethics and make ourselves morally upright. Imam Zainul Abidin, peace be upon him, considers listening to good words and turning away from bad words, including backbiting, as among the rights of one's ears. He says, "The right of hearing is to keep it pure from listening to backbiting, and listening to which is unlawful to listen." In the light of the Imam's wise statement, the ears are a means for not just understanding what others say, but gates for entry of either good or evil. By listening, we not only realize the good or bad intentions of others, but in many cases, we acquire knowledge and felicities through our ears. In verse 78 of Surah Nahl, the Holy Quran calls the ears as a means for acquisition of knowledge and virtue by saying, "And Allah has brought you forth from the wombs of your mothers. You did not know anything. And He gave you hearing and sight and hearts that you may give thanks." The Prophet's sixth infallible successor, Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace be upon him, also invites human beings to make their ears the instrument for transferring virtue and knowledge to the heart. He says, "Listening to good words and putting them into practice opens the gates of paradise to mankind."
state intervention, a confession of failure. Dear friends, the Spiegel Online website recently elaborated on the state of the world economy and especially that of Europe. It wrote, following the recent emergency meeting of European leaders in Paris, Germany announced a 500 billion euro financial sector rescue plan. German commentators are split in their response to this latest move. Stay tuned for excerpts of this analytical article. European leaders met for an emergency summit in Paris recently to discuss a coordinated approach for addressing the financial crisis in the Eurozone countries where Europe's common currency is used. At the summit, convened by French President Nicolas Sarkozy, European leaders pledged to broadly pursue a bailout policy based on the direct infusion of capital into ailing banks. In accordance with the principles agreed upon at the emergency summit, German Chancellor Angela Merkel unveiled plans for a 500 billion euro rescue fund to help shore up the German banking system. Markets rallied on the news, with the German stock exchange DAX posting strong gains in trading after the market opening and rising by 8.01% by afternoon. This is the first time European leaders have come together to articulate a shared strategy for dealing with the crisis. German commentators have responded to the emergency summit with a mixture of praise and criticism. Some laud European governments for finally coming up with a coordinated response, warning that state intervention may be the only way to stop the crisis, while others argue that though inevitable, the move is tantamount to admitting failure. The center-left Süddeutsche Zeitung Daily of Germany writes in this regard, the Eurozone countries are now trying in a matter of hours to make up for what they have failed to do for years. A common currency with a strong, harmonious political system exposes itself to immense risk. A common currency area without standardized regulations for the finance industry has the potential to totally lose control during a crisis, as we are now seeing. The seemingly ill-coordinated bailout dance of recent weeks has made it clear that national governments are not strong enough to act on their own. The markets have sensed that European leaders have merely been taking shots in the dark. A precious week went by before the European states discovered the strength of the group and before the United States acknowledged the mistakes in its own bailout plan. The German business daily Handelsblatt writes, the crisis definitely gives us the chance to reconsider our understanding of the state's role in economic questions. The interventions that have just been approved are not, however, a matter of nationalization in the traditional sense. A scenario in which the government becomes the country's long-term banker must be avoided at all costs. Instead, helping others to help themselves must be the maxim. The state has offered its helping hand, but no one is forced to take it. If financial firms are able to weather the crisis through the help of private investors, so much the better. The Business Daily Handelsblatt adds, experience has taught us that in companies influenced by the state, economic reason is often pushed aside because of political considerations. That's why we should be prepared for setbacks. At the same time, the rescue of the international financial system can't be done with the usual means, and that's why it should not be judged on purity laws. In the same regard, the business daily Financial Times Deutschland writes, this package, which has the potential to add several hundred billion euros to the burden of Germany's national budget, is to be pushed through Parliament with expedited proceedings. Both the measures themselves and the speed with which they are to be adopted indicate that the allegedly stable German banks are at tremendous risk. Their problems plainly go far beyond a shortage of credit from other banks. Financial Times Deutschland goes on to say, all in all, the European bailout package yields a sum that surpasses even the current U.S. plan. The finance ministers of the European Union have thus also come to the conclusion that they must approach this problem with guns blazing. Finally, here's what the center-right Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung writes on the economic crisis. The least one can demand is that individual governments retain freedom to maneuver. It's bad enough that German taxpayers have to step in on behalf of local bankers. Why should they also be responsible for the chaos wrought by a bunch of Brits and Americans through lax regulations and reckless home-building programs? State intervention is a confession of failure on the part of the financial system and a severe blow for free enterprise and the social market economy. There seems to be no other alternative for the moment, but in the long run it still holds. The state is not a good businessman. It will need to pull itself back. This is something the Chancellor knows. Until then, however, those who need to call upon the state's help should brace themselves for significant oversight from Berlin. The bankers can forget about using taxpayer money to pay their managers fat bonuses.
Narcotics propagation by Western cinema. The U.S. film industry, Hollywood, which produces about 700 films every year, has lost its artistic status over the recent decades because of promoting the culture of violence, drugs, and promiscuity. The moral decadence is so critical that Americans themselves have begun to criticize Hollywood, which is largely controlled by the Zionists. Recently, a report released by the World Health Organization said Hollywood has become the center for propagation of violence, narcotics, and promiscuity, which are chief factors for spread of addiction in society, disintegration of families, and the dreaded disease, AIDS. The movies depict all evil practices, including narcotic addiction, as something fashionable in order to mislead youth in the U.S. and abroad. For instance, in TV serials such as Woods and movies like Pineapple Express, the heroes are drug addicts. Critics suspect that successive regimes and the White House are either indifferent to the moral plight of the society or they have no power to control Hollywood. The result has been disastrous, to the extent that advertisements openly promote narcotics and other vices, while the prestigious awards go to characters that play bad men and bad women, openly consuming drugs and indulging in adulterous affairs. A recent report released by the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crimes shows that although the U.S. accounts for a mere 4.5% of the world's population, in the first 8 months of the current year alone, it consumed 45% of the world's entire cocaine. The U.S. is the world's biggest producer of marijuana, to the extent that it is more easily available than corn in the U.S. The link between drugs and politics in Hollywood is more than it appears. Former Hollywood actor and the present governor of California, Arnold Schwarzenegger, is of the opinion that marijuana should not be classified as narcotics despite its use as such. He admitted in a recent interview that he is a habitual user of marijuana, which he simply calls a kind of plant. The remarks of Schwarzenegger shocked many Americans and provoked widespread protests for the negative impact of such comments on the children and the youth. However, this is not the whole story. In view of the fact that many U.S. politicians use this drug covertly and indulge in some of the most abominable sins behind the scenes.
This is Tehran, the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. I'm Mehran Dashan, a very quick review of this hour's top news stories. Iran's oil minister Ghulam Hossein Nozeri says Iran, Qatar and Russia will seriously pursue the formation of a gas exporting group similar to the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, OPEC. And Director of the International Atomic Energy Agency, Mohammad Abada, has disputed claims by certain Western countries against Iran, saying the Islamic Republic of Iran is not developing nuclear weapons as alleged by certain Western countries, and that Iran does not have the needed materials. That's all the time we have. On behalf of myself and all the team here in Tehran, a very good night to you.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 19:30 to 20:30 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 49-meter band, 6,205 kilohertz for Europe. 41-meter band, 7,205 kilohertz for Europe. 41-meter band, 7,260 kilohertz for Europe. 31-meter band, 9,800 kilohertz for South Africa, and 31-meter band, 9,925 kilohertz for South Africa. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via the following satellites. Galaxy 25, 11.836 gigahertz frequency. Telstar 12, 11.806 gigahertz frequency. BAT 4, 11,662 megahertz frequency, and Hotbird 8, 12,437 megahertz frequency. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box 19395-676, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via our website, english.irib.ir. We'd be very pleased to have your comments about the audio quality and other means. Thank you.